Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Well, it is not often that we have owners with us on the Fan. Occasionally, John Mara will call in and we might get the Jets owner, Mr. Johnson, as well. But this time we're going a little bit far afield and we're talking to the owner of the Atlanta Falcons. But he is a Sunnyside, Queens guy, Arthur M. Blank, and he's also the author of a new book called Good Company, the story of his co-founding Home Depot and the Falcons and the PGA Superstore. Lots of good business advice in that book. Mr. Blank, thank you for joining us. How are you today?
I'm doing great, thank you. Probably in 2020, you just want to start out saying you're healthy. So I feel good and I'm healthy and just trying to get through this very difficult year, as you know, as we all are. But the sun will come out tomorrow. We're going to be in good shape. So,
yeah, and the Falcons, of course, had a tough opener, but the team has not had great success of late. You have had personal great success with Home Depot and everything that you've done. Right. One of the things that I saw years ago when the stadium was going up, they did a documentary on PBS, I think, and the roof. I mean, the tolerances of thousands of inches for that roof to be able to open and close perfectly. That must have been a pretty daunting experience getting that thing off the ground with the pilings
and
everything.
It really was. It's a funny thing because, you know, when we first were in the design business, the roof, we interviewed about six architects. And actually, a couple of the ones that we didn't select, including the one we did select, they all said the same thing. The roof is going to define the building, and the complexity of the roof is going to either make it iconic or just another vanilla stadium, you know, and we didn't want anything that was going to be vanilla. I mean, vanilla is a fine ice cream but flavor, but we didn't want that for the franchise, the NFL, or the city. So it's a very unique structure. It's gotten, you know, a lot of recognition, a lot of awards, and it ended up, you know, costing more than what we originally projected and taking a little more time to get done. But, you know, I look at it as a 30-40-year project and something that we wanted to represent the very best of our values, which I think it does.
Certainly so. And one of the interesting things, and I heard this on an NPR interview, I think, where you went 21 inches for the seats versus right. 19 inches.
Right.
And they told you, well, you know, we're going to have 21 in the luxury areas, 19 right, for the rest right. of the fans. And you put your foot down and said 21 for everybody. Tell us about that.
Well, it was an interesting experience. I went to the, you know, to the seating option, you know, activity. And we had like 20 different seats laid out there. And I had seven or eight of our senior folks were there. And we all went around, sat in different seats. And I sat in the one that you mentioned, the 21-inch one. And I said, this is really by far the most comfortable one. You know, spacing is a couple inches, which really does make a difference, et cetera. And so I had a couple people say to me, well, we plan on using that, you know, where there are club seats and, you know, some, you know, preferred seating, et cetera. I said, well, I mean, why don't we use it throughout the whole stadium? So I remember I got stone silence. I mean, nobody actually believed I was going to say that or actually do it. And a couple of weeks later, we had a meeting with our architects, and they came back and they said, you realize this decision, you're going to add another 250,000, 300,000 square feet to the size of the project. Now it's, you know, it's close to 3 million square feet. If we do this, we're going to have to redesign the building and make it bigger because, you know, you times 2 inches times 71,000 seats or thereabouts, you're going to have a bigger requirement. So I said that doesn't, you know, faze me. We need to do the right thing for our fans. And And I think that's really, you know, the essence of the book in a lot of ways, is talking about, regardless of the business, and all those businesses you named earlier, including our soccer team, and regardless of the geography, whether it's Montana or Atlanta, or you know, we operate these PGA Tour superstores in half of the big cities in the United States today, the same core values apply. And in this case, it's, you know, putting who we serve first, which is our fans in this case, could be our guests in terms of our guest ranches, or it could be our customers for our PGA business. So putting them first, thinking about things on a long-term basis, and making decisions that are consistent with that, and that's what reinforces these values. And I would say the beauty of that in all of these businesses, as well as Home Depot, is that we've had incredible financial success, which is important because, you know, you have to have a business. I am a capitalist. I do believe that businesses have to be profitable. They have to be sustainable. If not, they're gone after a short period of time. But on the other side of it, it's having a business that's based on a set of values that drives, you know, overwhelmingly, you know, purpose response to our fans, guests, customers, whatever the case may be, with our associates and with the communities in which we live. So the stories and the thoughts throughout the book really say, do the right things for the right reasons and live with the consequences. It's all behavior driven. It's not driven by numbers, and it's not a set of 600 values. It's a set of six. And those are consistent, and they were built at Home Depot and now applied in all these diverse businesses. So for somebody who's looking for answers, and we find many young people today are looking for, you know, answers that are more significant than just making a living, if you will. That's important. I get it, and they get it too. But they want something to be connected to an organization that has a purpose, that's a higher purpose than just staying in business, if you will, and making a return on the investments.
Well, one of the things you have done, and it was very controversial, especially with your fellow owners, was lowering the price of concessions. And everybody you talk, oh, God, I go to a ballpark and it's $12 for a beer and $10 for a hot dog. Tell us about that experience.
Well, you know, it was really interesting because, I mean, I've got six children, you know, you name an age, I have a child. You know, I grew up, you know, very, very middle-class background as a young man and throughout my life until the success of HD. But, you know, I always heard the same things that you just described and felt the same things you just described. So, you know, beyond putting a winning team, you know, on the field, on the pitch, in case of soccer, whatever the case may be, is that one of the big issues that fans have is that they feel like they're in a captive audience. They're overpaying for product that they know on the outside costs half as much or a third as much, whatever the case may be. So in terms of food and beverage, we said, you know, from the outset, August the 17th, when the stadium opened up, is that we're going to price everything at what I call then street pricing or fan-friendly pricing, if you will, which is what our marketing team calls it. But basically, the pricing is exactly the same that you would pay, you know, across the street at a fast food place or a fine restaurant. And we told the restaurateurs who operate in our stadium that your prices, your quality, your quantity, and the prices will be the same as you have in your restaurants. And so, you know, beyond them, like, opening their eyeballs really wide and saying, are you serious? Because we usually charge 2 to 3 times as much. They said, yeah, we're serious. And if you don't understand the value of that for your brand and our brand and taking care of the people that are supporting us all, our fans, then you really don't have to be in the building. So we had a couple that decided to not participate, and, you know, the other ones all did. The result of that is the last 3 years, both in the NFL and Major League Soccer, we've been rated number one by fans across America, obviously in Atlanta, but really across America, in terms of the food and beverage experience. That's a way of saying thank you to our fans who give us their time, their energy, their passion. They give us their financial resources, too, but you know, they give us all the emotional content and their time, which is really so critical today to all of us. So you find ways, you constantly seek out and find ways to say thank you to the fans, to the guests, to the customers, the people that are supporting your business. And do it not only for them, but do it in the communities in which we live. That's why giving back, it's not just a question of writing checks, it's being actively engaged in these communities, as we have been on the West Side of our stadium, which is an area that, frankly, is the birthplace of Dr. King, the birthplace of Maynard Jackson, who was a first African-American mayor in the history of Atlanta, and the birthplace of the Civil Rights Movement. So that area has, you know, has decayed over probably the last 40 years, and we've committed over a long period of time to make a difference in those communities, and we're doing that. It used to be 60, 70,000 strong middle-class community. Now it's down to 6 or 7,000. But with our commitment and the commitment of other, you know, institutions, corporations, nonprofits, it's now back and resurging. Crime is down 43%. Public education is better. There's many alternatives for kids post getting out of school. So we have a program called West Side Works, which we've trained and actually placed approximately 1,000 of the people that live in these communities, these zip codes, and they've brought back close to $22 million of earned income. So being part of the community and what that means to the community and what it means to our associates, their sense of pride in the organization as a result of doing that is very, very important.
Now, that flies in the face of something that happened 50 years ago this week, which I'm sure you're aware of, Milton Friedman's story in the New York Times Magazine, where he basically said, all you need to do is worry about profits. You have to worry about your stockholders. You don't have to worry about your customers, your associates. The main thing of business is to make money.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, reading the book, that you have taken kind of the opposite approach. Not that you don't want to make money, but that you value these other things more than that.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say more. I would say the same. Because I think there are several things behind that. Number one, Milton Friedman was, you know, is incredibly smart, and genius, really, in his own time. But that was 50 years ago. I think the country, and particularly our younger population, is more enlightened than that period of time. They're more demanding. They do ask the questions like, you know, the proverbial questions as we get older, and I'm certainly on that end of it, you know, like what is life and why am I here, et cetera. But the reciprocal part of that is life asks each of us, in my view, you know, you've been given a gift of life. You know, what are you going to do to take advantage of that and to nurture it and to create, you know, a broad circle of love and a circle of humanity that's bigger than just you and your immediate family? And, you know, we see that being demonstrated in a whole variety of ways. And one example is Yale University. I was reading something today. It's ranked number 3 or 4 in the United States in terms of the university. It's a 205-year-old university, and the professor there, Dr. Lori Santos, who teaches a psychology class there, she started on a volunteer basis. You know, kids sign up for the class. They want to come 30, 40 kids at a time initially on basically a happiness lab. What makes people happy, and how do I get my life to have more fulfillment in it, et cetera? Well, the last 2 years, one quarter of the student body, Yale University, 205-year-old university, have signed up for that class. They've had to move it off campus. So our younger people today, they'd be asking Milton Friedman if he was alive today, God bless him, but if he was alive today, there's got to be more than just making money. And in fact, if you look at the Business Roundtable, which is chaired by one of the endorsers of the book, Jamie Dimon, who is the chairman and CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, they last year, after 50 years of being in existence, they last year have said, you know, it's not just about profitability. It is about our associates. It is about our suppliers. It is about our communities in which we exist, as well as maintaining a level of profitability that will sustain the business. So I think the thinking has changed. I think it's coming, you know, from a lot of different quarters, but I'm thrilled to see it come from the young people. And my greatest hope with the book is that, you know, a lot of young folks will be reading it and understanding that, you know, this is values-driven businesses across the United States in a variety of settings have had great success, not just by focusing on profitability, but focusing on these other things as well, which are connected to profitability. Associates who I think understand that there's a higher calling than just making money, I mean, they have a sense of pride in working for that organization. They go home at night, their chest is out, their shoulders are back, they feel good about what they're doing, they feel good about we're involved in the communities, they feel good that the associates are being cared for in a variety of different ways, and they feel particularly good that, you know, the work they're doing is making a difference in terms of the people that we're serving. Again, fans, guests, customers. I'll add one other point onto that. Not only were we ranked number one last year for food and beverage in the NFL and Major League Soccer, but the NFL does these sub rankings of game day experience. They ranked us number one for fans feeling like they're a welcome home, if you will. They feel like they're coddled, they're appreciated, they're saluted, they're supported when they come into the stadium. And that only comes through our associates who feel like, you know, this is not just about money. It's about, you know, making sure these people feel like when they come into our home, it's called Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but we articulate it to those associates, make believe this is your home. How would you want somebody to feel to come into your home? You want them to feel loved. You want them to feel cared for. You want them to feel like they're nourished. You want them to leave and want to come back. So we want to create the same environment in our stadium, and I think we do that beautifully.
Well, also the thing that you achieved at Home Depot, and when you left, I have to say, as a longtime customer, it changed. It used to be you'd go into Home Depot, and the associate would come, and they would know a lot about every single thing. And you even have a great anecdote in the book about how one guy one of the managers was down on a associate because instead of selling him a $200 faucet, he sold him a $1.50 part, which repaired the one he had. And you wanted the name, and he goes, "Oh, you're going to fire him?" He goes, "No, I'm going to give him a raise because that's what I want our people to do."
Well, you know, it's a great story because what it really speaks to, and I think in any business, you know, the human relationship is the most critical part to developing that trust. When you develop that trust, in this case with a customer at HD as an example, you know, they're going to come back time and time and time again. So if they feel like, you know, they're really walking in my shoes and in my footsteps, if you will, they're trying to solve my problem for the least amount of money, not the most amount of money. When I come back and I want to do, you know, redo my kitchen, add a room onto the house, put on a patio, whatever it may be, they're coming back to a place that not only has the products and the assortment and the pricing, but they feel like they have a level of trust and a level of knowledge. So that's been the strength of Home Depot for many, many years, and that's really what we try to do in our golf business. An example, I can give you so many examples. There's one in the book which talks about one of my ex-associates at Home Depot who went in for a golf fitting. Well, you know, he tried to buy a brand new set of clubs after a couple of lessons, and the fitter said, you know, "I'm not ready to sell it to you." He said, "Well, I'm ready to buy it." He said, "Doesn't make a difference. I want to see your swing develop over the next couple of lessons, and then I can do a better job in fitting you with the clubs that you actually will need." So, you know, I mean, he called me and said, "I can't believe I could not buy a set of clubs from your fitter because he didn't think I was ready." And so he made me wait a few more weeks. He said, "That's unheard of in retailing." But that's the kind of trust relationship we have with all of our associates and all of our businesses. And it's not just with the people that we're serving, but it's in the community. So I'll give you one of the brief examples, if I can. This year, our guest ranches in Montana have been operating for about 100 years. One of them particularly has never been closed for 100 years. This year, because of the pandemic, we elected to close it. So we followed all the CDC protocols. We followed the local public health officials, state public health officials in Montana, et cetera. But after they left, they said to us, "You know, you're doing everything here that you could possibly do. But we do want to tell you something. You're going to have disease here. You bring 70% of your associates come from out of the state. Almost 100% of your guests, you know, come from out of state. It's the number one rated dude ranch in the West. And so you're going to have some illness on the ranch." So we've been involved in these communities, these cities that are close to where we are, and have been connected with them both philanthropically and invested a tremendous amount of time on the ground and working in a whole variety of different ways. And we said, you know, we don't want to be a business that's owned by somebody out of state that brings disease to this valley and then affects these neighboring cities where they, you know, certainly can't, you know, like nobody in the United States, they don't want it, they can't afford it, you know, et cetera, all the downsides of the COVID. And so, you know, we elected to close. Now, I didn't know this, but, you know, so happened that the governor found out about it, and I happened to see him about a month later, and he just said to me, "You know, I heard about this, and I just want to thank you on behalf of the million people that live in Montana and the 11 million people that come here as guests on making the right decision. You made the right decision. It was not the right decision, I understand, from a business standpoint." I said it was because of thinking about our guests long term, but he said it really was for the communities that are active in those areas. So, you know, these decisions are not hard to make when you take a longer-term view and you understand that you really just want to do the right thing for the right reasons, and don't worry necessarily about each decision is the best bottom line decision. There's a bottom line of relationships in life that we think is critical as well.
Couple of quick things before we let you go that are football related.
Okay.
One of your biggest disappointments had to be the Super Bowl. You had a huge lead. You went down, as you do, and you make that clear in the book. You always come down for the fourth quarter anyway. But, you know, the cameras are on you and your sidelines and you kind of dance and you're happy and everything. And all of a sudden, the Patriots, I don't have to recreate it for you. You know what happened.
Okay.
I mean, publicly, that had to be such a crushing moment. And tell us about the locker room afterwards and how you handled that huge disappointment.
Let me give you an answer to this one, Richard, and then I'm getting nudged here. We have to wrap it up. But I actually wasn't dancing. I mean, whenever I go down, I do it. We've done it for 20 years, win, loss, tie. I want to be down there with our players and our coaches. I want them to see me. I want them to know I'm there, standing beside them, if you will, you know, win, lose, or tie, as I said. And the Super Bowl was really, really, really no different. You know, we were ahead 28-3 in the middle of the third quarter. You know, I really can't give you, a sports expert or any of your listeners, a good reason as to why we lost the game. We made some bad decisions. You know, some things happened, et cetera, and happens in football, happens in sports. So we did. So my role then became one of, you know, how do I nurture, how do I take care of this family of players and coaches and fans and my own family, if you will, in a way to set the right example. You're dealing with adversity. How do you get over it? How do you overcome it? How do you move on from it? And I think our coach, Dan Quinn, did a wonderful job during the off season and on into the next year, because the team came back and they were very competitive. And we ended up going fairly deep in the playoffs as well. Again, when most people said the team's probably going to be down after that kind of loss. So I think, you know, as a leader in any organization, you've got to lead by example. We talk about that in the book. That's one of our core values, lead by example. Because, you know, people will follow somebody who's not leading from the back of the pack. They want to follow somebody who's leading from the front of the pack. And so, you know, my role then shifted from one of just, you know, being an owner that's going to celebrate to an owner that's, you know, had to deal with this horrific loss that was totally unexpected and, you know, the biggest overtime loss, comeback, I should say, in the history of the game at a Super Bowl level, and we have. So, you know, our team has been good since then. Last 2 years, not as good as we should have been or could have been. We're anxious about this year, and we're anxious to get going and show the league and show our fans what we're capable of doing.
The book is Good Company, the foreword by President Jimmy Carter. Arthur M. Blank, thank you so much for joining us here on The Fan.
Absolutely. We'll add one thing. You know, you mentioned earlier, one of your occasional guests is John Mara. John does, and I work closely with him in a variety of ways, he does an incredible job on behalf of the NFL. I mean, and Giants obviously as well, but he does an incredible job in a variety of settings, a variety of responsibilities, and represents you know, the best of his family, the history of his family, the history of 100 years of the NFL, and I'm proud to call him a partner and a fellow owner. So enjoy your time with him whenever you have it. You can count on his words. It's always a lot of wisdom and always a lot of truth.
And we have the Giants play-by-play here on The Fan, so we're happy about that.
Good.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.